Welcome to, well, that fucked me up.
It really did.
A podcast with Luke Coulson.
And Kyle Wise.
And each week we're going to be talking to real guests about their amazing, often traumatic, life-changing events.
Focusing on stories of survival, hope, and overall triumph.
Which is flipping awesome.
Yeah.
Because we're all about that. We're all about listening to people's stories about adversity and trauma and crazy stuff. I think there really is something for everybody. There's many, many topics, many, many guests, people that really have got through some extraordinary things. Please share the love, share the show, get in touch, follow us, subscribe, click. We're trying to make it easy and open for people to discuss things that may normally feel tricky to do so. We've been on an extraordinary journey and we're glad you can join us. Enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode of Well, That Fucked Me Up. I am your host, Luke Coulson, and today we're joined by Kendall. Hi, Kendall.
Hi.
Hi, Kendall. What's your last name?
Patterson,
because it's not on your thing. And by the way, just as I said that, my children have started screaming at the top of their voices. And I said, as soon as I start recording, they'll start yelling, but we'll see about that. Kendall, where are you calling? Where are you calling us from?
I'm from the Pacific Northwest in Washington, kind of like Kirkland area.
Okay, cool. We've just been talking about the weather because I'm English and that's what we do. We talk about the weather. And here in LA, it's spring-like and it's quite nice. Well,
quite springy here too, and we're enjoying the same weather, so I'm really excited for summer.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on the show. We have a guest on each week who comes on, and thank you. We have a guest who comes on each week who to talk about their life-changing or surviving life-changing events and experiences. We're all about the journey. You might have been through one specific event. It might have been a physical thing, might have been an accident, might have been emotional, mental. Could have been your entire life, could have been a series of events, could have been relationships. And we've had guests that cover absolutely all of these things and more. And what we try and concentrate on is the things or the thing or the things that happen that people have been through, the struggle that they have had, the adversity that they faced, and then how they've come through it and like where they are now. And for the most part, most of the people that come on the podcast are in a place where they want to come and talk about what they've been through. So, Kendall, with all of that, where would you like to begin?
So it's funny. Thank you for the great intro. I really appreciate your guys' podcast.
Thank you.
And I think it's one of those things that when I start thinking about coming on to these kinds of podcasts, and I'm like, where do I start? Where do I genuinely call it the turning point?
Yes.
Because, and I was thinking about this and I had to write it down, and I was just doing some inner workbook stuff because I've been working on that for probably the whole 2024, really deep diving further into the inner self and the little me.
Mm.
And it's hard because I think I come up with like some significant whys in my road where I'm like, oh, that was really powerful.
Mm.
But the most significant that I think that I really would love to focus on that has really changed kind of how I operate with my children, and really just my whole thought process and world. And it's changed my financial well-being. It's changed a lot of the things in my world. So I think that's where we'll start. So we'll say, I'll give you the highlights of some of the really fantastic things that have happened.
Mm.
A couple of the major whys. I have two parents that are traumatic brain injury victims,
gosh,
both at different times, both before I was 25.
Wow.
And yeah, my mom was in a coma for 7 months. So we'll venture down that one. I've survived physical essay, poverty, and my two parents being traumatic brain injury victims. I was actually raised by my father majority of my life, which in the 80s didn't really happen. Major career switches and success. I have three children that are 21, 17, and 4. So there's a whole different level of trauma.
Wow.
If you will.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I had five generations alive at one point, so it kind of tells you a little bit of like familial history.
Wow.
And I have some really phenomenal stories from past partners that have done some really interesting choices in life. Wow. But I will say 2021, the culmination really kind of like knocked me for a loop. After having most of my life living in survival mode, most of my life through some catastrophic things, 2021 really took it up a notch. So to give you a little framework, I was married and this was my third husband. So I've been divorced three times now. Wow. So there's a spoiler alert. Sorry wow. about that.
That's okay.
But in the middle of the marriage, we had in 2020, my third born. So my four-year-old right before the pandemic hit. And in 2021, he was still nursing every 2 hours, was not taking food or bottles or formula. So I got about, 2 hours of sleep at a whack, maybe 5 hours if I was lucky. Tough. And I think I got that three, four times out of the year and a quarter that he nursed. So going into 2021, I'm sleep deprived and extremely tired and not recognizing how powerful that was. And then also we in January had my mother-in-law, which was our only care system at this point for our four-year-old or at the time newborn. And she got leukemia. I was diagnosed with leukemia. That was pretty significant because that was right about the same time frame that COVID hit. So it was really hard to lose your caregiver. And when I actually happened to be switching careers by luck, I stopped doing hair for 16 years and started in full-time into real estate. So I was very busy, but I was also considered essential. And in Washington State, it was a very shut down state, very different state than I think a lot of the surrounding states. And California, you guys were probably very similar. But then, so grandma had leukemia and then father-in-law in February passed away.
My goodness.
In January, also my husband at the time switched careers. He had a 15-year career with a local public works, and then he switched into fire, which was really challenging because it took him away so many days of the week and for volunteering and then also helping his mom and his dad through all of their hardship. So there I am. I have a senior in high school. I have I think he was in eighth grade at that time. And through the middle of COVID, we just lost mother-in-law and father-in-law. And mother-in-law wasn't passed away, but diagnosis took her away a lot.
Yeah.
And then he switched careers. I'm full-time in real estate, so I'm busy. 2021 happens to have been my busiest year in real estate. So I was like slammed on top of this and sleep deprived. And then we hit a wall in our counseling and in our marriage. And we had finally just said like, okay, enough is enough. We're calling it quits.
Yeah.
And that was around 10, 11 o'clock in the morning on June 29th. I remember this day very specifically because later that night at 9 PM, my father passed away.
Goodness.
And I received a message on that night. And strangely enough, he passed away in his sleep, and it was kind of always a saying for me that like, well, at least I woke up today, so I got to live and enjoy the day. And now he just really solidified that, you know, some people just don't wake up, and I'm fortunate that I woke up.
Yeah.
And so I think that coupled with, you know, my daughter going to college out of state, you know, little empty nest plus divorce and death and two deaths really that we're grieving. And then his mom has survived. So that has been awesome for her and for the family, but going through divorce during all of this. And I think I just hit that turning point after a culmination of obviously having no mentorship or parents for most of my life. My grandfather also passed away in 2020, who was like my rock. And just like, if anything could have gone wrong in 2021, it did.
2021 and sounds like it sucked for you, like big time. It's like,
you know, what's really funny? I actually don't remember it sucking.
Right. I guess you're kind of
I feel actually liberated.
Interesting, because it's one thing after another. So tell me about, I mean, I have 1,001 questions about all of that stuff you just said, but while we're at the point of the turning point, what did that look like? What was the culmination of like enough is enough for you?
in my marriage is where I never expected to get divorced. I was in my third marriage. I had already had that shame or that guilt of the title of having two failed. And I just didn't want to get divorced. It was absolutely not an option. I was going to die with this man. I just really didn't expect for it to end that way. And I realized through counseling and one of the questions I had asked him, I realized that the turning point was then, because he truly, and I say this now, and I don't really know if he recognizes this, but he just didn't like me.
Wow.
And it sounds so crazy to say this, but I realized in a conversation, I asked him when he felt like he, or like what his feelings were when it came to love to me. And I realized at that point that I had spent, you know, 7 years with somebody that just didn't like me all that much. And he might have had love for me because I had his only child and we were married and we had a pretty good marriage, but we, I just realized in that moment that I had spent so much time trying to fit myself into a box that he would love. And I never did. And it didn't matter how much I did. It didn't matter what I did. It didn't matter how I looked. He just didn't like me all that much. And I think it ultimately came down to that he just didn't really surpass his trauma. And so he was stuck in that and didn't really feel the love for himself, I think, unfortunately. And I just couldn't live that way any longer, because it was like crushing my soul and realizing that I may not wake up tomorrow. Do I really want this to be my legacy?
Well, and that is very profound, but I relate to that a lot. And also I understand, strangely understand from his perspective, I have struggled with trauma and love for myself and self-esteem and value. And when you're down on yourself and you can't accept love and you don't think you're worthy of love, it's very hard to give love back. You just don't know how to do it. So it, that's rough, but it's also good on you for realizing that. And I think what you're saying is, like, you've got, as simple as it sounds, you've got one shot at this thing, right? You've got one shot at life. So why are you spending your life miserable or stuck in a rut when we all have a choice? And sometimes it feels like we don't have a choice. But I think through doing this podcast, I realize through a lot of our guests that you have a choice, but it's often shrouded in fear of the unknown. And so you're like, well, maybe I'll just stick being sort of slightly unhappy and miserable because that's my safe space. But then you're like, well, you get to 80 years old and you look back and think, well, that was a waste of fucking time, wasn't it? Do you know what I mean?
I have spent most of my life thinking that way, as like, what would I say when I, to my, as my 80-year-old self, what would I say to my younger self? And the unfortunate truth is, I'll be like, you know what? I don't wish at 80 years old that I'd had less sex. I don't wish that I'd done more work. I don't wish those types of things. I don't wish I would have had more hardship. I wish I would have enjoyed life more. And really experienced, and literally so many quotes are play right into this with the whole, like, you only regret what you don't try. You don't regret the things that you try. I've led with that with my children and it's never served me wrong. And I think that, I think at a young age, I realized that fear can very much so play a part in my decisions. But I will say that I try really hard to not let it, because I would tell my child, and that's how I base a lot of my decisions. I was like, what would I tell my daughter? Would I tell my daughter to stay in that miserable relationship, or would I tell my daughter to go out and live life and enjoy the heck out?
Of course. God, that's really interesting, isn't it? I've got some questions about the your all the death in your family and the traumatic brain injuries. What were those caused from, and what were the, what was the situation with both your mom and your dad, and how did that affect everything?
So they're wildly different and they're fascinating themselves. And actually, in hindsight, that was a major, one of my major whys in my road was my mom was assaulted in Tacoma at a young age of like 28, I think. And my mom was beautiful. She was kind of not a very big human. And I think she'd gone such a traumatic childhood that it led her down the path of drugs and alcohol. And she was in... from what I know, and this is the hard part about brain injury, is you don't really know the whole story because they don't remember, and
Wow.
or they don't know how to tell it from a perspective that anybody else could see as honest. You don't really know. You have no idea if they're on drugs or not, or and so she was assaulted into coma and left for dead in the alleyway, and he had used a shampoo champagne bottle, I
Oh
guess,
my goodness.
and she had three major head contusions, and then I think also a boombox, maybe, but if that word still exists.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, this is the hardest part of this story to say this, and I don't know if you'll have to bleep this
We
out
can
or
talk
not.
openly about anything and everything. I think I know where you're going with
Okay.
this.
So she was in the alleyway, basically dying, and somebody essayed her in that condition
That
in the
is
alleyway. And
horrendous.
then somebody finally got her called into the police and got her into the hospital.
Bloody
I was
hell.
in like fifth or sixth grade. I was very young. And when she was in the hospital, she eventually slipped into a coma for about 7 months. And that was probably the best thing, and also very rare. I learned after studying comas and studying traumatic brain injuries, comas are really rare for them to come out anything less than a vegetable after 6 weeks. And it's actually functional enough to live on her own. And she did have to relearn how to walk, talk, eat, do everything after it, and had to have surgery to lengthen her tendons and whatnot in her legs because they had atrophied during coma because they didn't stretch her enough. Because not likely are they ever going to come out after that amount of time.
Well,
So she's
that's
actually kind of a miracle in itself that she's even alive.
and she's still with us.
She is.
And that's extraordinary. And how's your relationship with her these days?
It's not good, unfortunately. It's really hard because she didn't raise me. She physically abused me as a child, a small child. And because of her brain injury happening at the turning point that I did in my age, she never raised me and she never really was a parent to me. And then when she was, and I have tried, I think it's a brain injury. It doesn't allow her. It's like going on 50 first dates, but all she ever wants to talk about is the worst parts of your life.
That's
And
extraordinary.
so it's hard to have a relationship with
Right.
her.
That's really tough. And did you say there were drinking drugs involved with her as well, leading up to the? That's really, really tough. Do you have siblings?
I do actually, and this is the other hard part. I have a one whole sister by her and my father, and she is an addict as well. And then I have a half brother and a half sister by my mom that were adopted out of my family that are in California that I've never met physically in person, but I've been able to talk to either on the phone or on FaceTime with my sister, which has been really cool to see. And then I have a half sister by my father. So I have a lot of siblings. I'm the oldest, and my mom was 16 when she had me, and my father was 21. So that kind of tells you like even
I
more.
was my one of my questions when you said that there were five generations of your family, and I'm glad I didn't ask it because you give me the answer now. I was going to say, is there longevity in the elders of your family, or were people procreating extremely young in your family?
Young. And I felt like a champion because I made it all the way to 19 or 20, and I didn't actually plan on having my child. I just was blessed with him and, or her. And so I really, because of my childhood, I never planned on having children. I just feared that I wasn't going to be the repeating of the cycle, but I ended up not repeating the cycle in a different way and still having children. So that works out well.
There's so much I want to talk to you about, but let's talk about your father. Let's try and keep, I'm trying to keep some
Yeah,
linear
I
going.
know. This is the hard part.
No, it's brilliant. It's all falling into place nicely, or not nicely because of all the shit you've been through. But your father's
Okay.
traumatic brain injury, what did that look like, and when did that happen?
So we were in a tough spot. We weren't speaking at the time. I was like early 20s, and I had just had both of my two kids. I had gone through the divorce. I had gone through a traumatic relationship that with a sociopath, technically. I don't think he's actually a sociopath, but that's what I would call him diagnosed-wise. Good guy, whatever. Anyways, he and I split up, and I started going with like an elementary school boyfriend that I'd met like 20 years prior. And we were out at the beach, and I got a phone call. And it was hot. It was like the year that we had like 110 degrees here in Washington, that like never happens. And I got a phone call that my father had been in a motorcycle accident.
Wow.
And he was on his way to Harborview, that he was actually, we were told that he was unresponsive on arrival.
Mm.
And there was likely a chance that he was not going to survive, but he was on his way to Harborview. I beat everybody there, and I was the first one to get there. And he had been fixing a motorcycle for his third wife, who is not my favorite human.
Mm.
And I beat her there, and he had all of the ribs on his right side were broken.
Oof.
He had collapsed the right lung.
Oof.
He had separated his right shoulder,
oof,
torn his right ear in like half.
Mm.
And when he got to the hospital, he looked as though he had no neck. He was so swollen.
Oh my gosh.
And he was just in really bad shape.
Mm.
And he was just fixing the motorcycle and bent down to kind of feel where the leak was. My dad was a very good mechanic, and went off at a rock embankment, and had no helmet and no jacket, and really did a number on himself. And that moment was actually one of the hardest, because my dad raised me.
Yeah.
And I remember being in the hospital. He was in a coma for about 17 days, probably somewhat medically induced as well as brain injury. But he suffered worse than my mom did.
Mm.
My mom was young, and I think her brain was young, and she was able to rehab even though she was in a longer coma. It took longer, but I think she had more resources because my grandmother was very adamant about making sure she got into the correct rehab programs and doctors. Whereas my father, being very stubborn and older, he was like 48 when this happened. And he didn't have the resources of a parent taking care of him and making sure that he got that rehab. Mm. And he was stubborn. So, and then I think in the brain injury, he actually had the same type of brain injury that my mom had, which was like the frontal lobe, which is a very challenging brain injury because they center focus around themselves and they have a very hard time thinking outside of themselves.
Yeah.
So like if you have a conversation with my dad, he'd be like, hey, I'm good. I, you know, did this week, blah, 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 blah. And then there's just like silence.
Wow.
Like, I'm good too. Yeah. Thanks for asking.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's very rarely any of that. And there's very rarely any of a moment like, how are the kids? What are they doing? It's just all centered around his brain and what his body is doing and what he is thinking about.
Gosh.
And it's very hard for both of them to have a conversation outside of that.
Yeah.
It's very impulsive brain injury too. So mm-hmm. anything that they think comes right out.
Interesting.
So be prepared for some really abrupt conversations.
Just to say exactly how he sees it.
Or thought it.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Not even, like, I think it's, so my mom, one of the most notorious and one of the reasons we have a hard time is because she says things that I think she thinks is a compliment. But one of the things during one of my baby showers, she said, and she said this multiple times, this is not a one-time event. I'm so glad I didn't kill you when I was pregnant with you, because look how you turned out.
Yeah, that is extraordinary, isn't it?
That's... And I'm like, thank you?
Yeah, great. Thanks. I'm not thanks, sure Mom. Where to...
Yeah. What? That's... in front of everybody, and you're just like at a baby shower, you're just thinking, okay.
Yes.
And she actually did genuinely want to have an abortion, which at 15, I don't actually blame her. I understand where that feeling would come from. But the doctor said that she was too far along. And so that's why I survived.
That's extraordinary, isn't it? And do you think, can I ask a personal question? Did you ever, with all of that growing up and having such a young mother and the drink and the drugs and the trauma and the relationships, did you ever turn to drink and drugs? Did you escape that world? Because they're often quite interlinked.
My mom physically abused me with a medal under the belt when I was about 5. And she was removed from our home as a result.
Ah.
So my mom didn't raise me. My father did from about 5 on.
Okay.
And my father was actually very steady and good He could have been better, and he did experience, I did experience some of him utilizing maybe marijuana and drinking later in my high school years. And actually, fast forward kind of how I found you, but I am working on a TED talk about this type of trauma because I always wanted to know, because I've experienced so much trauma, why I was different from my sister, who was only 18 months or so apart from me, experienced a very similar situation, but went through her entire life being an addict. And she's a methamphetamine addict, and she has had two children during this. And I've just experienced such hardship watching this because she actually looks similar to me, although I will say she kind of got some of the better genetics. She got light eyes. She's very pretty. She got a lot of the good things that you would hope to be as a female. And yet she still just like struggles with a lot of insecurity and a lot of things. But I think ultimately I did sort of dabble. I tried marijuana, but I was so terrified. One time in my entire life, I tried mushrooms and it absolutely ruined me. Yeah. I have too much imagination.
Yeah.
But alcohol and anything that takes me out of the control of my body or makes me feel like I might go down the same path as my parents and I'm out.
That's amazing. I think that's how it goes for kids with, kids from abuse, kids from addict or alcoholic parents. I think you either you inadvertently follow suit or you stay as far away as possible.
I have a theory on this. This is what my TED Talk is about. I actually have a theory on this that I think that it has something to do with the first 3 months of your life. So bear with me on this because I think that after reading lots of books about trauma, the Oprah, What Happened to You, all kinds of different documentaries. I was a hairstylist for 16 years. So I've talked to a lot of people. And I always thought maybe it was astrology sign. Maybe it was this, maybe it was that. I just never could put my finger on it. But recently, and I'm 41 years old, and I just now feel like I might've figured this out. I think that when we see children experience not enough love or get their needs met in the 0 to 3 months is when they have a harder time with malleability or resiliency with trauma. That if they experience it from their 3 months on, but got the necessary items during their first 3 months. So example, I was the firstborn to a young family. I think I got the full attention and love of my mom because she nursed me that first 3 months to a year and there was less stress. There was no other children to take care of. My father knew it was his. There was no pushback on the family really because they just wanted to make sure everybody was okay. But then my mom hadn't dealt with her trauma. So she got through and, you know, functioned well enough to have me and to nurse me and to give me all those first things that I needed. And then my sister, I think my dad accused her of maybe cheating on him and maybe the baby wasn't his. And then on the same token, you know, the shame or the guilt that might come along with that, the arguments, the stress, whatever, and never dealing with the trauma, being under 18 and like probably wanting to go out and be a teenager. I think that my mom didn't get the time, energy, and love to my sister in those first 3 months because there was stress and guilt and shame and the stress of having an additional child that was older. That bond may not have gotten as built as mine got. And I think my sister suffered longer as a result.
It's really interesting because obviously we don't know, do we? We can't remember any of that. Can't remember anything between 0 and 3 months.
But when you start looking at it, we are finding that generational trauma is also a thing. Like your egg was actually developed inside of your grandmother's body because it's like crazy genetic timing, but like any trauma that your grandmother experienced during that, you could also experience in your life because your egg was already there. And then you add in, think about postpartum depression. And I think for years, there was a whole generation of kids that weren't encouraged to be nursed. They were encouraged formula fed.
Mm.
And imagine how many of those are probably not the healthiest of
Yeah.
equation
Yeah.
because they didn't get those really necessary brain. And now they'll tell you when you have a baby, you got to hold the baby. Skin to skin contact is very important for those first moments, for the first 3 months. And they're starting to get it. And I think
Wow.
that this is why courts and everything else always tried to keep baby with mom, even in the signs of abuse, because I think that that's the one intrinsic bond that child needs. And I've seen adopted kids, my own siblings included, that myself included, because my mom technically abandoned me in my young mind and abused me. And I suffered, but I had those building blocks from the first 3 months that somehow kept me tided over well enough to have resiliency through the rest of my trauma.
That's awesome. Yeah,
I'm
wow.
grateful, but
Yeah.
if what if we could genuinely change those first 3 months? I think about postpartum depression, adoption, even just moms passing away during birth, et cetera, how hard that is for children if they don't get those necessary building blocks for those first couple of months. And then they could have a, angelic life and very, very loved and everything, but they still have that deep-seated like abandonment or loss, grief that I feel like so many people experience for
That, I mean,
a lot longer.
I did, and I don't know how the first, I feel like the first 3 months of my life was okay with mom, but who knows? I feel like my trauma came from the relationship I had with my father and some experiences I had as a 11, 12-year-old losing a friend. And I feel like that was all quite a big part of what I now perceive to be what made me the kind of drink and drug addict that I became for nearly 3 decades, that seemed to me to be like n trauma that I can now go back and say that's they're the feelings and that's the fear and that's the panic that triggered me running away from how I felt,
I don't disagree that traumatic events can very drastically change your trajectory later in life. I just think we have something to do with that intrinsic bond. And now I have a couple of questions on yours because what age were your parents together at that age when your dad harmed your relationship with him?
Yeah, they were.
So imagine in a world, how do you feel about, and bear with me because this is a very sensitive question, but how do you feel that your mom maybe didn't protect you from that?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. And she listens to these episodes, and we've spoken about it, so I can talk openly about it. But of course, I have a big brother who didn't get the brunt of anything. And my dad took everything out on me, everything. And I couldn't do anything right. Everything was wrong. Do that again. You've done it wrong. You're useless. Tick, like pecking in my brain. No, what I remember of my childhood was just negative criticism on a daily basis, which is not healthy for a human being to go through. It's like torture because you're making a child believe that they're worthless. And that's the trauma that I have experienced and I'm still having to work through. Because as a father to my children, I lift them up and I encourage them and I keep them safe and I tell them that I will do anything for them, that they're everything to me. And they can come and find me in the middle of the night if they're scared about anything. They can call me any time of day if they're worried about anything. Obviously, they have to fend for themselves as well, but what I don't remember having from my father figure is any of that. You could do it. You got this. I believe in you. And if your father doesn't believe in you, then very rarely you're going to have any belief in yourself at all. And so,
And I would agree that the father to son bond also is a very powerful one, no different than mother to daughter. But I think that there's something there with the mom being the protector because that's the intrinsic one. and that's the one that grew you.
Yeah.
And I would be willing to bet if you really like dive deep into that one, it would probably help more so than you realize, because I think that the same thing I saw within some of my friends and family was if dad was very harsh, but mom dealt with it and never really like stood up against it. If you look at Mindhunter, that's like literally like the whole premise of serial killers and everything is like when mom doesn't protect from them. It's something to do with intrinsic bond of mom being the unconditional protector. And I think in many animal world kingdoms as well, like mom is the ultimate protector when dad is sometimes
not. You know, I think she was scared of him. And I think that's fine. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've had to come to accept. And I have these like, I do replay these moments in my head where she just like boshes him over the head with a saucepan and tells him to shut the fuck up and stop speaking to me like that, you know? But again, that, in this day and age, that's now abuse in the wrong direction. But do you know what I mean? More in a kind of like, you're completely right, like as the protector. Or, you know, my brother, once he got to a certain age, he was bigger than my dad. So my dad couldn't pick on him. So my dad, when my brother was 14, 15, he was enormous. And when I was 11, 12, he was my older brother, I was tiny, and I was still tiny when I was 15, 16 years old. And that's when my parents got divorced. And I'd recently had a friend, had been in an accident with a friend who died when I was there. So I was left with all of this survivor's guilt, and whether I could have saved his life. But I was 11. So it's like, not too sure you know how to save someone's life who's dying in front of you at the age of 11. So to have gone through all of that, and then that triggered more abandonment, that everyone around me was going to die. It was a horrible, horrible, horrible place to be in my head for the next 6 years. Then I think I just thought, well, I'll just start taking drugs. That might help. And then start drinking. That might help. And then, you know, I did manage to kind of put a great life together, but it was always tinted with what transpired to be major alcoholism, which, you know, nearly ended up in death again 6 years ago, which is when I, you know, stopped drinking. So it's like that, like just those moments of my, not those moments, because it was my whole childhood, but they shape a human being. They like that.
Your subconscious is formed before you're 7.
Totally. And by the way, I can't remember one single memory from before the age of 10 years old. Nothing.
I'm very similar. I have a lot of blocked and repressed memory, and I've gone through a lot of counseling, hypnotherapy, etc. It doesn't come up. My brain is so good at protecting
me. Same here. Mine's in shutdown. And you know, back to the point that you made at the beginning, was that's really hindered relationships for me, because I have in the past gone through the motions of being in love with somebody. I've gone through the motions of saying, I love you, but I haven't necessarily felt that way. I haven't necessarily felt it. I've wanted to feel it, and I've pushed myself to feel it, but I haven't allowed myself to feel it. Right. And that's changed recently, which is great. It's a nice feeling. But I say to my girlfriend all the time, like, she doesn't understand what I mean when I say this, but I say, you've probably got about 30% of me emotionally at this stage. Mm-hmm. She's like, but I feel like I've got 100% of you. I said, imagine how good it could be. But for me, I want to feel more of the lows as much as I want to feel the highs. But when you are, when you're suffering from PTSD, especially childhood PTSD, your brain is closed for business. No, thank you. Not today. Let's not feel anything. That's easier to not feel anything. Let's just numb everything. And then, you know, I got to a point where I'm like, I don't want to spend the rest of my life looking back and thinking, is this it? Like, not in terms of relationships, but in terms of me, in terms of my emotions, in terms of
your capacity to thrive,
experiencing life, like I haven't grieved the death of my father 6 years ago. Nothing. Zero. Zilch. Nothing. I've tried.
So you say that because that was a part of our argument in late of our divorce was he wasn't acknowledging that he had grief, that his father had passed away because his father wasn't the kindest of souls when he was young. And I, exactly, and had a very subservient mom. And I was like, I was married to you. And bless his heart, he is a good man. And he is a very loved person in my world. But he definitely reached out to alcohol multiple times. But he would tell you, I'm not crying in my beer about my dad. And I said, no, I understand that. I know that you aren't. But that doesn't mean that your subconscious isn't screaming out for protection from what he did. And unfortunately, I'm getting the brunt of all of that.
Yeah.
It's been painful being a child of this. And I think I have spent my life creating a women's network and women's camaraderie, which is actually fairly new within the last, and I think it was a kind of my turning point in 2021. I built this women's group that was wildly successful, and I never was really good friends with women. I didn't trust women. My mom had broken my trust so many times over my life that I just didn't, I didn't connect with women. I was raised by my father. I was very tomboy. The girly girl that you're seeing in pink right now would not be caught dead in pink in my younger years or called girly or wearing jewelry or makeup, or I was very, very masculine. But I think that I spent so much time in the past couple of years trying to support women. And it's funny because I keep hitting a wall. Women don't need the support. Women are very good at finding their own support. I think I've discovered that men are actually where we need the most support in helping our societal change because you guys have not had the acceptance. We've had 50 years of coming into our own, if not more, and having rights and having all of these things and having support systems is normal for women to talk to each other, to collaborate, to do all the things that we need to do to get the stress out. To cry is acceptable to be female because you can be emotional. But we have raised a society of men that are to be tough, that are to be strong. Don't be a pussy. Don't be this. Don't be that. Which, by the way, is a ridiculous statement because testicles are way more weak.
That's so true.
I don't know why we use that. It's my most least favorite comment. So funny. But I just think that men need genuine connection and relationship. And I see so many men lashing out as a result of women being tired of trying to be their mom or trying to fix them or help them. And they just continue on this like really, really detrimental path. And there's like an epidemic of women like not dating, of not having children, of not being married, would rather be single, living in a commune with all their girlfriends than to date another man.
Yeah.
And we're seeing the culmination of where men genuinely need support and love and acceptance that their trauma is important too.
I think that is spot on. And, you know, being a vulnerable man is quite a nice place to be. Like I, especially with this podcast, but I surrounded my friends with a bunch of dudes that tell it how it is. Kyle, who joins me on this podcast from time to time, he's like the most vulnerable human ever, and he just blurts it out. I mean, a little bit like one of your brain traumatized parents. He doesn't think before he speaks, but he'll say like, "You ever kind of like just feel so down and worthless that you want to like kill yourself as soon as you wake up?" And he's joking, but he's sort of there's tinged with like a it's a cry for help. And we've talked about suicidal ideation. We've talked about why we both used to drink and drugs. I met him in like a sobriety community, let's put it that way. And he struggles with relationships as much as I do. And we speak to other guys. We've had other guys on the podcast who have come on and spoken very openly about emotional abuse or trauma from their childhood that's resulted in them trying to kill themselves. And it's all very real. And we know this too. There's a huge epidemic of guys round about my age, or I'm 49, just 50, 51, 52, mid 50s. The suicide rate is extremely high for that age group of men, because where do I tell people that I,
especially if they're white, right? Yeah. Because if you're hetero and white, I don't even probably use the right terms because I'm over all
that
the
seems
labels.
But up to date for now, yeah.
Okay. Also, I think that so many men, it was like, you guys were the problem, right? The patriarchy decided this is how we get to blame all of the problems of our government and our world is because of men. And it's funny because I grew up watching Oprah and thinking at a very young age, I was like, I actually kind of see how watching more Oprah, like I kind of dislike men.
Yeah.
Men are the creators of war and rape and all of the terrible things that we see. But when you start piecing together how important that first intrinsic bond is, the creator, your mom sets the tone for how I think men are raised. And I think because there's like that whole mama's boy and daddy's daughter, daddy's girl.
Yeah.
I think it's real. It's very real. When you have a healthy mom raising children, you don't actually need a dad in the picture. When you have an unhealthy mom, you have a problem.
Yeah.
You have a very big problem for children.
Very interesting.
So I think young men need a lot more of what we are starting to see in millennial and Gen Xers, way they're raising their children is different than the way we were raised and where our grandparents and our parents were raised. I'm not saying that I would totally be on board for wholly just gentle parenting, but just the understanding that we don't need to beat you in order to get any points across.
Yeah.
And we can use our words and it's okay to cry and it's acceptable to be whoever the fuck you want to be. Yeah. It doesn't mean you have to be hetero. It doesn't mean you have to be in which way or label. Yeah. You don't have to have a corporate job to be successful.
I think
we are narrative.
I think society is helping with that as well. Like society has moved so fast in that direction. And, you know, my 14-year-old is, I just encourage open conversation. And they're great. I have two boys and, you know, it was me and my brother growing up. So it's like history will not repeat itself. But it nearly did, you know, I was right. Half of their lives, I was drinking heavily. And it was... That was rough, and I'm glad I managed to end the cycle of that. And my goal is to end the lineage that gets passed on through families. That's a thing. But all I can do is let them know and give them as much understanding as possible in terms of what this stuff's all about. And my eldest, you know, he saw me a couple of times in the way that freaked him out, you know, and it's like that's traumatizing for him, and I have to live with that. But I'm making them.
But congratulations, you didn't show him that you stayed there.
Yeah.
That's the most powerful thing. I think that he didn't see that and then think, oh, he just stayed there and I had to deal with this forevermore.
Yeah.
That trauma got healed in some way by seeing you overcome it.
Definitely.
And he will likely, adversity is not terrible for human beings. Adversity is very good for human beings.
Yeah.
However, it's perspective and how you deal with that adversity, right? Because just because he saw something bad, we see bad things all the time. It's how it's perceived and how it's dealt with afterwards that it's most significant.
So conscious of the time, somehow we have to wrap up in a couple of minutes. Let's talk about now where you are now. Let's talk about the turning point and the 3 years that have brought you up until today.
So somehow through all the trauma in 2021, I made more money than I probably ever made in my entire life. Trauma was good for me.
That's amazing.
Be focused. Yeah. I have nothing else. And then I have since gone through the full divorce and we sold our home, which was actually a really challenging point for me. But I came to some realization at some point that everything that I have survived, I'm still here. I've survived it all. And so money or not money, I've had ups and downs throughout my entire life. I'm just still here. I still have a roof over my head. I still have happy, healthy children. I'm still happy and healthy. I don't And I never have been a big drinker, but I don't drink much at all. Since that point, I definitely have been much more aware of it. And I just health-wise and time-wise and money and calories and all the things, I just don't do much of it.
Yeah.
I've gotten to experience my daughter's 21st birthday and go take her, and she graduated through college. So that was a big proud mom moment. And then let's see here, I'm working on a TED talk. I'm working on, authoring. I was right before this, recording, I was meeting with another author that I really admire. She's really phenomenal. And we just have the best conversations about this stuff. And so, it's probably in the slated to do another book and actually write my story, because I think that it's so powerful to have come from nothing and come from poverty and come through all of the hardship and whatnot to share, because other people will see that as inspiration and hope. I hope, because I've come from nothing and made it award-winning successful realtor, and
amazing.
I own an investment property, and I have a really good life, and I can't complain. You know, there's just peace at some point. And I think relationships will always kind of be something that I need to work on, obviously, because I was not raised with a great mentor, and I don't have any mentors going forward from like 16, as far as parentals. And so relationships are the one thing that I'll probably need to pay attention to. But if I'm okay by myself and I'm okay and healthy, then I'm happy.
Yeah. I mean, it is an inspirational story. And, you know, just having guests on who have been through not just one, I mean, one thing is, you know, just as traumatic, but just this kind of lifelong one after the other. And just that culmination that you talked about, it's 2021, which is like, come on already, with the deaths and the divorce and the COVID. And I think our listeners love these stories and the guests that come on to tell the stories, like yourself, because of the, you say peace, right? And that's how I feel now. And 6 years ago, I literally thought I was going to kill myself. Like I couldn't see a way out of my mental capacity. I couldn't imagine not drinking myself to death, finding happiness, recovering. It was the end. It was the absolute end. I remember it so well. I was like, I can't go on anymore. Like desperately, desperately unwell from a mental health standpoint. And when I look back and then I talk to guests like yourself, so anything's possible. Like peace. Peace and happiness and security and compassion and love for yourself and like excite. I used to wake up every morning and have a panic attack. Like, fuck, I'm alive. Fuck, like, fuck it. I don't know what to do. Right? I don't know what to do.
My heart hurt to hear that. That's so hard.
Yeah, 20 years of that. And then now I wake up in the morning and I'm like, people laugh. Like, at work, like, what do you do? Why are you up so early on? Like, what are you responding to? We got an office in London, and I've done I would have done a 12-mile Peloton cycle by 6 a.m. And then I have my cup of coffee and I'm like, woohoo, like fucking, yeah, let's go every morning. I'm like, come on, what do we got today? And just before I came off on this call, I just heard that we lost a massive pitch at work. One that we've all been working our socks off for 2 weeks. And I thought we were getting it. I thought we were getting the project. And we just found out just before I came on. And it's like, it hurts. But how I realize I've come such a long way is it hurts and it's disappointing. It's not my fault. And it's not on me. And it's not because of me. And it's also just a project that we didn't win the pitch on. But 2 months ago, we did win a pitch of this size and somebody else had to lose. And it's life. But this is the sort of thing that used to be like, I would take it to like the next level of self-deprecation. And it was like I would run over and over in my head. And then I would actually have physical like panic attacks. Any negative news, any negativity was just magnified, like it was the end of the world. And just hearing you go on.
Done your human design or any like deep dive into your astrological charts?
No.
Okay. If you at all are interested, I would love to run your human design because I think that it would drastically change some of your perspective as well as give you ways to listen to your intuition and your natural gifts.
Okay.
And it provided a lot of change for me in a positive. And then also I started working with Compass Real Estate a couple years ago, actually in 2021. Mm. And the CEO, Robert Refkin, coined this for me, but this is kind of along the same lines is when things are going bad or you think that it's like not going right, like even a relationship, when a relationship goes south or they don't want to be with you, his response was always, this is good because... He said, I got so many bad questions that at some point I just always answered with this is good because I couldn't answer with a negative after that.
Yeah.
I didn't want to harm the company. And then on the same token for me, mine was always like, thank you. And as soon as somebody shows me who they are and that they don't want to be with me, thank you. Because now I have the opportunity to go out and get what is meant for me. And I think that that's even with this pitch is a thank you. There's a reason you didn't get it. It was not meant for you and or it's not good for you. Mm. And thank you. And this is good because now this frees you up to get a pitch that is actually meant for you.
Correct. We've got three other pitches that we can dive into next week. And this one was the one that was going to be the biggest scramble of all time. And we were all dreading it. So, you know, like it is what it is. It's just tough because there's expectations with any job to make money for you or for the company, but look, life goes on. And just hearing you say, you know, you're here, you're breathing, you're alive, even right back at the beginning of our conversation, like you've woken up this morning, make the most out of your day, but you're healthy, you're happy, and your kids are healthy and you're happy, and we're all here, right?
Yeah, I have another day. Exactly. So this is also from a church pastor by that is absolutely brilliant. He's in San Diego, but he was up here for a long time and he coined this, and I will forever this be my mantra, is life is a gift and love is the point.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we have to end there, don't we? Yeah.
Thank you, Ryan Meeks. That amazing. Is genuinely like the best way for you to think every day. Today is a gift.
Yeah.
It is, the present is the gift, right?
Yeah.
The present moment.
I love that.
And yeah, so just enjoy the hell out of it because you won't look back when you're 80 and be like, man, I wish I would have been sad about that pitch.
Yeah, quite. Also, who gives a shit? Do you know what I mean? It's like, whatever. Yeah,
but you did
your best. It's all you can do, you know? That's the other thing. I know I just said we're wrapping up, but while we're having such a frank conversation, I think like I was kind of led to believe through my childhood that my best wasn't good enough. Mm. And so when you have that in your brain,
just got opened up, is what I heard.
So yes, so when you have that in your brain, it takes a lot for you to believe that your best is good enough. So now I can put my hand on my heart and say, I'm trying my best in everything that I do, and if it works, great, and if it doesn't, I'll try again. You know,
I think also it's super important to remember this from one human to another, that like literally you don't have to do anything and you're good enough already. You are worthy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't even have to fucking do anything, sir. Like you didn't have to work. Your work is not your success, nor is it your worthiness.
Yeah. So true.
Although it provides you purpose, right? Because you're helping others and you're by proxy helping yourself.
Mm.
And I think that honestly, helping others is also a very selfish act because it only almost makes me feel good, even though it helped people.
Yeah.
But I will say, you are worthy. You just have to know and feel that despite somebody else's best efforts. And you have to also remember by basic psychology, his own lack of worth, self-worth, is what caused him to harm you.
Of course.
It has nothing to do with you. Other people's thoughts, feelings, and emotions, and even actions have nothing to do with you.
Mm. Yeah.
You didn't cause any of that. You couldn't have caused any of that. Mm. The worst of children couldn't have caused any of that, because the best of parents can still parent through that.
Yeah.
That is a him thing, not a you thing. Mm. And you have to recognize that you, and also what would you tell your son?
Yeah, exactly.
Would you tell your son, like, well, you didn't work hard enough there? Yeah.
No, I'd You're say not you worthy. Did your best. You should be proud of yourself, and wasn't meant to be this one. So, you know, don't worry about it. Move on.
I think that's like the only way I give advice anymore is, well, what would you tell your child?
Yeah. It's because really good.
The only thing that gets me through tough decisions is like, what would I tell my daughter?
Mm. I love that. Well, Kendall, thank you so
Absolutely
much.
Absolutely a pleasure.
This has been brilliant. It's been a long one, yes. But I haven't found a good opportunity to say, let's stop talking, because it's just been so great. I could have gone on for another hour. But thanks for coming on.
I take a photo of us we're filming?
Go.
Okay.
Go.
Okay. Ready? Perfect.
Here we go. Put my best side pose on.
I love it.
Thanks for coming on, and we'll make sure that in the show notes there's any links for any websites or social where our listeners can find you. And that remains just for me to say thank you again. It's been a wonderful conversation.
Yes, and if you guys have any socials, please share them, because I would love to connect also.
I'll find you immediately, and we can share socials. Sounds perfect.
Wonderful. Great to meet you.